Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives to wrap up the week. And we also want to let you know we're sponsored again today by Donors Trust. Donors Trust is the community foundation for the Liberty Movement, offering all the benefits of any other donor-advised fund, such as simplified giving, tax benefits, and additional donor privacy. Go to donorstrust.org/ricochet to get your no-commitment free prospectus. And let's start with the good martini as usual, Jim. We talked a little bit earlier in the week about reports that the Russians allegedly had also tried to hack the RNC in addition to the DNC. Reince Priebus, of course, suggesting that that never actually happened. And now it appears that Reince Priebus was exactly telling the truth. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. Russian hackers tried to penetrate the computer networks of the Republican National Committee using the same techniques that allowed them to infiltrate its Democratic counterpart, according to U.S. officials who have been briefed on the attempted intrusion. But the intruders failed to get past security defenses on the RNC's computer networks, the officials said, and people close to the investigation said it indicated a less aggressive and much less persistent effort by Russian intelligence to hack the Republican group than the Democratic National Committee. Only a single email account linked to a long-departed RNC staffer was targeted. And Reuters also reported on this in relation to the Director of National Intelligence not going to the point that the CIA is on establishing motive here. Quote, the CIA assessed after the election that the attacks on political organizations were aimed at swaying the vote for Trump because of the targeting of Republican organizations diminished toward the end of the summer and focused on Democratic groups, a senior U.S. official told Reuters on Friday. Jim, it might be because it wasn't working, and it was working at the DNC. Given the phishing scam that we talked about yesterday, apparently it wasn't that hard to get into John Podesta's emails, and perhaps the same was true over at the DNC. But the good news is here, of course, is that it doesn't appear that the Russians got anything from the Republicans.
So first of all, kudos to Reince Priebus. He was saying something earlier this week that sounded, if not implausible, kind of surprising when he insisted the RNC had not been hacked. Now we know that he was telling the truth, or at least as far as he knew, and he had good reason for thinking that, because they'd brought in the FBI. But the other thing which kind of I'm marveling at, Greg, so as I wrote up in yesterday's Morning Jolt, 2014, the U.S. Postal Service got hacked. A private firm that did background checks for government employees got hacked. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, got hacked. The IRS got hacked in 2015. Obviously, the big Office of Personnel Management hacking and the 22 million or 21 million federal employees had their personnel records and security clearance files taken. Then actually, ironically, FBI back in February and then DHS. So you're telling me, Greg, that the only institution that actually did what they were supposed to do in cybersecurity in Washington, D.C. is the Republican National Committee. Attaboy, Reince Priebus. You take a bow. That is amazing ability to pull that off. I think the idea that the Russians were just, looking for targets of opportunity, and this may have just been less out of pure ideological preference for Trump. Obviously, we mentioned earlier in the week that the efforts of Russian hacking began before it was clear that Donald Trump was going to be the Republican nominee. They may have gone after the Democrats the most because they found the most useful stuff there. So this idea of, Putin helped elect Trump and Putin is certainly the force behind Trump, et cetera, doesn't hold water. But I think the aspect that I just find single most pleasing about this martini, Greg, and just kind of makes me just almost thrilled is that somebody knew what they were doing when it comes to cybersecurity in Washington.
Yeah, it's not exactly a common issue. Usually we're trying to scratch our heads and figure out why some massive government agency did get hacked, like OPM or the Pentagon, or the White House, or the DNC, on and on and on. Jim, you mentioned Reince Priebus take a bow. I say Jim Garrity take a bow. I was waiting for your first response to see if you'd still be coherent today, because you were up at 3 o'clock this morning in order to properly prepare for guest hosting on the top talk station here in Washington, WMAL, filling in for your friend Larry O'Connor this morning. I understand you did a great job, and your brain synapses are still firing, so very impressive.
Oh, Greg. Or Cam, what show am I doing? What? Be a rough rest of the day. Rough. I don't know how morning show guys do it. They, I am spent. And what were we saying? What martini? This is the fifth martini? Six? What?
Well, plus you got to be cheery on morning radio because you don't want to make all the commuters fall asleep behind the wheel. So not only do you have to fight off your own exhaustion, you've got to fake that you're actually really, really excited and really, really energetic.
Yeah, I imagine hour by hour that faded.
All right. Well, even if you had to fake the enthusiasm, I'm sure there was no fake news on WMAL's Morning on the Mall today. And now there are safeguards against fake news on one of the most trafficked internet sites, that, of course, being Facebook. This is according to Business Insider, but the report is everywhere from yesterday. Facebook is going to start fact-checking, labeling, and burying fake news and hoaxes in its news feed, the company said Thursday. The decision comes after Facebook received heated criticism for its role in spreading a deluge of political misinformation during the U.S. presidential election, like one story that falsely said the Pope had endorsed Donald Trump. To combat fake news, Facebook has teamed up with a short list of media organizations, including Snopes, run by liberals, and ABC News, that are part of an international fact-checking network led by Poynter, a nonprofit school for journalism in St. Petersburg, Florida. Also apparently in the mix here, Jim, is PolitiFact, which is always very, very fair in deciding what is true and what is not in news. I'm pretty sure if you said Hillary Clinton lost the 2016 election, that would be partly true because she won the popular vote or something. So basically, we've got people that have been discredited throughout this campaign season and other years deciding what's real news.
Yeah, if these fact-checking organizations would engage with their critics, Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard did a really terrific job of detailing when a Democrat says something that's, most people, at least I would look at and say, yeah, that's completely, that's nonsense. They always get a, well, partially true, half true. They always seem to be kind of graded on a curve. I believe it was, one of my favorite examples was Mitt Romney pointed out that the Navy was smaller than it had been in 30 or 40 years. And they said pants on fire, even though it was, and I'm quoting I believe it was either PolitiFact or one of the other fact-checking sites that said, it's technically true, but warships are more powerful now. So they gave it pants on fire. Now, here's the thing. You can't get, if you want to say, oh, here's additional context or here's additional information, fine. But something that is literally true cannot be a pants on fire lie or else, the entire issue of flammable trousers loses all relevance and you can't use it as a reliable measuring stick anymore. I was discussing this with Cam Edwards earlier in the week and I asked him what his favorite one was. Greg, do you remember in the debates when Hillary Clinton claimed that the Heller decision in the Supreme Court was mostly about toddlers?
Yes.
Guess how PolitiFact checked that one.
Mostly true.
Half true. Half true. And every gun owner is screaming at their television saying it's not about that. But there we are. We look at that and say, okay, they got their hands on one finger on the scale. They kind of tip it. If it's somebody they like, they basically decide, okay, we're going to, give them the benefit of the doubt. And, well, they were in the ballpark and blah, blah, blah. But if somebody they don't like, and it's a synonym for Republicans, they judge it as harshly as possible. And they basically bring out the dreaded pants on fire one. And when you do it for things that are literally true, I think somebody had put it well. It might have been the Hemingway piece where he says these fact-checking sites, they don't just like check the literal truth of what the statement is, which I think is what most people what people expect when they hear a fact. They try to check the impressions that are left, which is much more subjective. And from there, we look at this and with a jaundiced eye, look at these organizations and say, okay, their job is to call Republicans liars. And I'd love to be proven correct. I would love for this new fact-checking and reliability system they're trying to establish it. The idea is by itself is not bad. I just don't trust them to do this well in an even-handed or fair manner.
Yes. Associated Press and factcheck.org. That might be the other one you're thinking of are going to be part of this little consortium as well. And apparently, when you see a story, you're going to have the opportunity to right-click on the arrow there and flag it as possible hoax. It'll be investigated. And then once they've reached a conclusion, if they decide it's fake news, there'll be a little thing on the post that says this is fake news or something like that. And then if you share it, you can still share it, but then it'll pop up and say, this has been decided to be fake news. Do you still want to share it? So that won't be annoying at all.
I was about to say, there's no chance that would be abused, right?
No, never. Well, donors trust. Let's talk about actual real news here, things that you can do to make a genuine difference in the world. It's the end of the year when almost one-third of all charitable giving occurs. Do you have a plan in place to make sure your charitable giving gets done easily and in alignment with your values? Donors Trust is the community foundation for the Liberty Movement, offering all the benefits of any other donor-advised fund, such as simplified giving, tax benefits, plus additional donor privacy. But only Donors Trust shares your commitment to conservative principles.
A donor-advised fund at Donors Trust can start with your fully tax-deductible gift of only $10,000. Donors Trust clients are united in the belief that private philanthropy does a better job of improving the nation than does government. So if you believe in using charity to promote liberty, then you owe it to yourself to look at Donors Trust.
Go to donorstrust.org/ricochet to get your no-commitment free prospectus. As we just said, there is no commitment. You will learn how a donor-advised fund works and how it can simplify your giving, save you in taxes, and protect your giving in new ways. You'll also receive bonus content to help you be more strategic in your giving. So visit donorstrust.org/ricochet right now to download a free copy of their very helpful guide. There's no commitment. Donorstrust.org/ricochet. And Jim, Donors Trust might be a very valuable thing, especially for Democratic donors heading into the next election cycle. They're not too happy. They might be looking for better ways to allocate their donations. This is courtesy of Hot Air with a little help from Politico. Democratic donors are still in shock over Hillary Clinton's loss to Donald Trump. It has taken them some time to come around to it, but they are now asking that the party look closely at why their billion-dollar effort to elect Clinton failed. From Politico, quote, "A lot of the bundlers and donors still are in shock and disbelief by what happened. They are looking for some introspection and analysis about what really happened, what worked and what didn't," said Ken Martin, chairman of the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party and a top campaign bundler himself. Quote, "It may take some time to do that, but people are still just scratching their heads." Or in the words of a Midwestern fundraiser who's kept in touch with fellow donors, quote, "A lot of people are saying, I'm not putting another bleeping dime in until someone tells me what just happened." But it gets even better, Jim. Without a framework for holding anyone accountable, increasingly annoyed party money men and women have been left to chatter amongst themselves about the underlying causes of the party's defeat and about how to move forward. Some have gone as far as to ignore calls from former Clinton finance officials seeking to thank them, while others muse about leaving politics altogether. Oh, Jim, this just gets better and better.
I'm trying to figure out which side to root for here, in the sense that in the interest of good government and, you know, not wanting to see anybody get ripped off, you know, those donors are right. They do deserve an accounting of their money. They deserve a, you know, like we can dispute whether the RNC's quote unquote autopsy report back in 2012, whether it reached the wrong conclusions. Obviously, a whole bunch of recommendations, but high among them was pass some sort of form of amnesty. And a lot of people, for obvious reasons, did not like that one bit. But I think as we are useful, when you have a really disappointing defeat, you look at what you did wrong, what you could have done better, what you were unprepared for, what you should have been more prepared for, and things like that. I think Democratic donors deserve that as much as anybody else. However, if they don't get it, Greg, they might never donate again. And that sounds pretty pleasing to me. So maybe some part of me does want to see them get ripped off and get no accountability or something like that. So if you actually had accountability in political parties, then that might even lead to, who knows, maybe even accountability in government service.
Whoa. Take a step back. Let's not get too hasty here. Wow, that could be amazing. Jim, I can't let you go without talking a little bit about Rogue One. I know you've already seen it. You've talked about it in The Jolt. No spoilers in The Jolt, so feel free to read it. Sounds like you had mixed reviews a good chunk of the way through, but ultimately it came together fairly well.
Yeah, I think most listeners are familiar enough with the idea. This is not part of the quote-unquote saga movies. And we hadn't even, you know, because this is the first one that isn't part of the previous ones, it's kind of a quasi-prequel. It tells you the story of what happened right up before the first movie, Star Wars A New Hope, that came out in 1977. And it's really kind of a different feel to the story. You can tell it's a different director. I don't think this is too much of a spoiler. It doesn't have like the opening crawl. The movie just boom begins. You just get into it directly. There's a very different tone and style and pace. And then for about the first third, I'm like, okay, this is interesting. The metaphor I used is the Star Wars version of Zero Dark Thirty, the film they made about the Bin Laden hunt. And then it kind of, you know, it went through the middle third. And at this point, I was like, okay, this is an interesting experiment. Not working for me. It feels a little too different. It's not what I'm looking for in a Star Wars movie. And then the third, it just, you know, it like catches fire. It suddenly becomes a much more exciting. I've rarely seen the climax of a movie make up for the flaws of the first two thirds. So overall, a triumph. It definitely ends on this very exhilarating note. I'll be very curious to see if lots of other people have the same viewpoint. But do that. You got to go see it because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. So everybody go out and see it this weekend, and then maybe sometime we can have a more detailed discussion.
There you go. Jim, your orders now are to hit the pillow. See ya.
See you tomorrow. See you Monday. What day is it, Greg? Huh? Who am I?
You got the whole weekend. Whole weekend okay. To relax. Jim Garrity of Dash and Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend, and don't forget to visit our friends at Donors Trust. Visit donorstrust.org/ricochet right now to download a free copy of their helpful prospectus. There's no commitment. Donorstrust.org/ricochet. Again, have a great weekend, everyone, and join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.